You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 28th of November. An important stretch for the Jazz if the playoff hopes still live. Denver Nuggets are in town. Are they better or worse without Millsap? A crazy question to ask, but legitimate. And a new feature. Time Travel Tuesday? We'll see what you think of it. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Hi, I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's show. Craziness around the NBA on a full night last night. I feel like we need to run. We'll run through a little of that as well on the show. With David Fizdale getting fired and big games last night. So we'll run through some of that as well as get you ready for the Jazz and the Nuggets and then kind of just look at where the Jazz are right now and what's going on. This is Locked On Jazz. It's your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. We give it to you each and every day with insight, expertise, weird little stuff, new features, and geeky stats you cannot get anywhere else. I had a neat little geeky stat for you the other day. I got to see if I can find this for you. There's now a way to count what players shoot off of other players' passes. Does that make sense? And the number one player in the NBA right now in passes to shooter. So if you go take... So let me see if I can explain this to you. It might not be making any sense at all. So if you take Russell Westbrook has thrown 387 passes that have led to a shot, Harden 370, LeBron 368, and then the next is actually all the way down to 289 to Ben Simmons and Lonzo Ball 268. So those are the guys that are leading to the most passes per shot. If you take anyone who's thrown 100, which gives you about the top 100 in the game. The number one player in the league shooting percentage off those passes is Kevin Durant. Not surprising. 71% effective field goal percentage off passes from Kevin Durant. 71. Number two is Donovan Mitchell. This is actually an interesting conversation. Actually, I'm going to elaborate on this a little bit more. Let me first mention that today's show is brought to you by our friends at Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street, Blake and the crew, as well as today is brought to you by Stop the Flow, a house with leaks can waste 100 gallons of water a day. Find out the most common leaks at slowtheflow.org. We would like to stop the flow, but we're being honest. We're going to slow the flow. It's kind of where the Jazz are defensively right now. All right, actually, let's dig into this. This wasn't going to be the first thing I talked about today, but I just think it's an interesting, and it gets into something I've talked about a lot that I feel like when I talk about it, a lot of you are wondering, like, what? And that is how turnovers, there has never been much of any correlation between turnovers, being low turnover and being a good offensive team. And low turnovers in winning has almost a reverse correlation. And I think this statistic that we're about to venture into might show you why. And the reason is because if you just make the conservative pass every single time, then you never turn it over, you're not actually very good offensively, but sometimes you make the risk. So the number one turnover team in the league, takes care of the ball the best, is Charlotte. They're 17th in the league offensively. Number two is Memphis. They're 24th in the league offensively. Number three is Minnesota. They're 6th in the league offensively, so they're good. Four is Dallas. They're 27th offensively. Five is Indiana. They're 5th. And 6th is Boston. They're 16th. And I always like top 6 because top 6 gets you to 25% or 20% is kind of a... So of the six teams, you have two that are in the bottom 20, two that are in the middle, and two are in the top. There's just no correlation. If you flip it around, 24th in turnovers is the Knicks at 14th. 25th is the Pelicans at 10th. 26th is the Lakers at 28th. 27th in turnovers, the Warriors at 1. 28th is the Heat at 25. 29 is who we play tonight in Denver, but they're the 7th best offensive team. And Philadelphia is worst in the league at taking care of the ball, but they are, and they're 19th. So if you look at the bottom six, I actually gave you seven there. Two are in the top 10, two are in the middle, two are in the bottom. There's no correlation. And the reason is this kind of stuff. So Durant, 71%. Number two is Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell, shooting percentage off Donovan Mitchell's passes is 68% effective field goal percentage right now. Now, I don't know what this, you know, if it tells all, but if we just play with it for a second, Mario Chalmers is 3. De'Aaron Fox, the rookie in Sacramento, is 4. Draymond is 5. There's a lot of factors. Good shooters, all these other things. And then there's actually a stat that you can keep an eye on of whether players shoot above their natural norm, and that's where all those players are. So they're actually getting players who are making those shots. It might be particularly open. They might tax the defense enough. A flip side of that would be Ricky Rubio's kind of right in the middle of this, is George Hill is a very low turnover player, and teams are shooting 44% effective field goal percentage off passes with George Hill. And Joe Ingles is a very low, generally a low turnover player. And we're only shooting 49% effective field goal percentage, excuse me, on that. Oh, I left my coffee in the other room. How can I continue with the show? So I think that's interesting. The other one, and the reason I was digging into this the other day, was OKC. So OKC plays a tremendous amount of isolation ball. Westbrook's the most efficient, Carmelo's second, and then Paul George is third. So then what I kind of wanted to know is, like, well, how do they rank in how guys are shooting off their shots or off their passes? So when Westbrook does pass, they're right in the middle of the pack. Right dead center, little below center, actually, at 56%. Then you scan down further, and you get to Paul George, who's at 51% effective field goal percentage in the bottom 18% of this group, and then Carmelo hasn't thrown enough passes that have led to shots. I don't know. I like that. I think it's an interesting way to look at things a little bit. Point guards, pure point guards in this group, I don't know if what Donovan and Mario Chalmers and actually De'Aaron Fox really fit as. Marcus Smart's pretty high on this group, which gives him some value. Kyle Lowry's pretty high. Alfred Payton's pretty high. Shelvin Mack, actually. And then Houston, by the way, who also is a high isolation team, James Harden is terrific. He's in the top 15, as you would expect. Frank Ntilikina is in the top 25, which I think is worth noting. Brooklyn's much better when Spencer Dinwiddie's on the floor than D'Angelo Russell. Spencer Dinwiddie's, you know, 27th on this list, and D'Angelo Russell, I don't know if he's played enough to have enough passes because I have it done by mass passes, but no, he's 82nd on the list. So he's in the bottom 13th percentile. There's a huge, like, why? Well, why would it be that Brooklyn's so much better? So I thought that's worthwhile. All right, that wasn't entirely what I intended, but that's my brain. I think this is an enormous, enormous, enormous four-game stretch for the Jazz here for two reasons. One, I had shut the door a few times this year on the idea that the Jazz are still in a playoff race, but the way things are going, one, that the Jazz are currently sitting in eighth, two, that Oklahoma City is not entirely clear who they are, that the Clippers, Blake Griffin got hurt last night, though they've won three in a row, I think they're done. I don't buy the Lakers. Memphis is finished. We're down to 9 teams battling for 8 playoff spots. New Orleans is still volatile. Oh, frankly, a win over Denver would be pretty big tonight. If the Jazz could win 3 of the next 4, 4 of the next 4, Denver at home, at the Clippers without Blake Griffin and without Patrick Beverley and likely without Danilo Gallinari, home against New Orleans on a back end of a back-to-back, on a brutal back end of a back-to-back, by the way, and then home against Washington after a weekend off, there's a chance we begin to have it. Rudy comes into play right about then. Rudy got hurt on the 10th of November. We go to OKC on the 5th. Rudy's a self-proclaimed fast healer. But it puts us in the Rudy ballpark there. And we get into a stretch where we're favored maybe once, maybe January 3rd, if not, probably not till January 15th. So you really can't afford to slip anymore. And then we go into this murderer's row of a schedule where you just try to hope you can grab some. But if we can get through at above 500 by the time Rudy comes back, you're going to be below 500 by the time we hit January 15th. And then you have a schedule where between January 15th and March 3rd, the Jazz play like 8 road games the entire time. And actually just scanning it, play Detroit who's good and Toronto's good, Golden State who's good, San Antonio's good, New Orleans who's good, Portland is good, Spurs that are good, Portland again. I mean, it's not like we're not – there's a lot of good teams. It's not like we don't play anyone. It's just that they're mostly at home. There's, you know, our softest schedule – the other one, just, you know, this is way looking ahead, but, you know, March 15th, we play Phoenix, Sacramento, Atlanta, 3 straight, Dallas, the fourth one. Those are go to the Spurs and the Warriors, come back for – Boston, Memphis, Minnesota, Lakers, Clippers, Lakers, that we could close on a little bit of a surge. So if we can just stay afloat, stay in this thing, maybe we have a chance. And I think we've discovered some things on how to play, and then Rudy comes back, we have a chance as well. So I think there's some nice possibilities. If we can get 3 of 4 here, that we put ourselves back into this game a little bit more than, you know, maybe more than we had considered. At least I'll speak for myself. There have been certainly times where I was like, all right, not going to happen. Book the mid-April plans. Maybe not entirely yet. Today's show is brought to you by Slow the Flow. And now another attempt by David to be cute, creative, and use basketball and water conservation in the same effort. In the past 20 years, Utah's weather has been a streaky shooter. Some years, it's all splash. Others, very little. And when you combine Utah's streaky shooting and dry summers, we have a water issue. So there's something we can do to slow the flow. You might be thinking, Locke, it's winter. There's probably not much I can do. Okay, but you'd be surprised. Slowtheflow.org has plenty of things you can do to conserve water in the home, like shortening your shower time. The numbers don't lie. They never do. If you showered just 1 minute less every day, you'd save 1,875 gallons of water each year. Imagine if everyone did that. Or even better, if you switch to an ultra-low flow shower head, you'd save as much as 2.5 gallons every minute you shower. You're a big Utah fan, right? So do it a favor. Head to the slowtheflow.org and find out ways you can save water. It's something we all can do. Slow the flow. Save H2O. It's me giving you the pass right here and you nailing the shot so we can be on the top of that list by going to slowtheflow.org. The Denver Nuggets are in town. They are without Paul Millsap. Numerically, they come into this game at 11-8. They are the 7th best offensive team in the league. They are defensively, they are the 18th ranked defense in the league. But I'm not sure that they're that good defensively. They're the 10th best 3-point shooting team. They're really going to tax us defensively on where we are as a club right now. Their shot profile on the offensive side is interesting because what you have is your leading rebounder, assist, and scorer is Jokic. Here's why I say this about the Millsap injury, and I got this listening to Adam Mattis on Locked On Nuggets, that Jokic had really kind of played second fiddle to Millsap. Even in training camp had said, hey, he's a 4-time All-Star. He's the guy. I'm just here to compliment him. This has really got to be Jokic's team. And Millsap's presence was denying that a little bit, I think. And so now you see them playing with Jokic as more of the primary guy. Their shot profile, they're the 8th best team shooting in the restricted area. Over the last 4 games, we're the last in the league at defending that. They're 6th best in the paint non-restricted. Those are areas which Rudy patrols. They're not a good mid-range shooting team. They're the 3rd best corner 3 shooting team in the league, and they're average above the break. From a Moneyball standpoint, they take the 17th most amount of threes. They go get in the lane. They take the 21st amount of shots in the restricted area. So they're actually, they're not a great Moneyball team. They're 19th in the league in smart shots. We're at 16th right now, if you're wondering. From a defensive shot profile, I always think these are telling. They're 27th in the league defending the rim. That's not a place we are a lot right now. We're going to have to find a way to get there. They're 28th in defending the mid-range, which we actually are there. They're the 7th best team defending the corner three. We're red hot from above the break. They're 29th in the league at defending the corner three. They allow the 7 fewest shots in the restricted area, so they really try to keep you out there. But they allow the 22nd most amount of threes and the 28th most amount, so third worst, of corner threes. Their defensive shot profile, which I think is a hugely important number, by the way, is 16th in the league. Not great. By the way, the number one defensive shot profile in the league is Miami at 1, if you're interested. You're going to find out whether you are or not. Brooklyn at 2. Clippers at 3. Jazz are 4. Detroit Pistons are 5. Ding, 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 why they're playing so well. 6 are the Warriors. I think that's an important number. It just, you have to do those things well. From an offensive and defensive standpoint, we're at 19 games. You kind of can look at everybody first half, first 10 games, second 10 games. Now, they're a little different in the sense that they are now without Millsap, so they're not quite the same team. They have been a much, much better defensive team at home than on the road. They allow 103 points per 100 possessions at home and 110 on the road. This is... their last 10 games have been better defensively, but again, without Millsap, then you go to their last 5, and suddenly they're not better. Their last 5, they've really become almost entirely the team they were last year. Unbelievable elite-level offense with just enough defense to win games. That's the question on who they're going to be. They turn it over a lot, 26 in the league at turning it over because they don't have a point guard, and we're the second-best team in the league at turning things over, so that should be interesting. They are not good when Jokic leaves the floor. That's where the Millsap injury really is going to hurt them. They are plus 9 when Jokic is on the floor and a minus 9, I think, when he's off the floor. Okay? That's a key one to watch. The same is true for when Jamal Murray and Gary Harris go out of games. When they have a bunch of guys that play that have huge plus-minus negatives. Will Barton is a minus 2 when he's on the floor, plus 8 when he's off. Trey Lyles is a minus 3 when he's on, plus 2 when he's off. Mason Plumlee is a minus 6, plus 6 when he's off. So those, Manuel Mudiay is a minus 10 when he's on, plus 12 when he's off. They are a really divergent team. You listen again to Adam Mattis, and Adam Mattis says that there's a 5 or 6 minute period in every single game in which they just kind of lose their bearings, and that ends up costing them games. That makes, looking at those numbers, it looks as though it's the same guys on the floor every night when that happens. So the Jazz depth is going to have to really play good second quarters as well. The other one that's interesting for this team is on the Millsap injury is who are you playing Jokic with? So remember last year they had him with Nurkic and it didn't really work. And so Paul Millsap and Nikola Jokic together were really good. They were plus 10. So now who's Jokic going to play with the rest of the way? Is it going to be that he teams back up with Kenneth Freed? They're plus 10 as well and were really good last year. Their defense is good. That's their best defensive lineup is when Freed is in the game with Jokic. And he has played the majority of his minutes with Jokic. So it's worth seeing. Denver has had a lot of time off, as have we, frankly. Their last game they played was November 24th. And so they've had some time to kind of figure out who they are. In that November 24th game, Farid and Jokic match each other the entire night. So every time Jokic goes out, Farid goes out. Every time Jokic goes out. And so Jokic played... It looks to me as though Jokic played about 20 seconds in the second quarter and about a minute and a half in the first quarter without Fareed. Otherwise, they were set and they played Trey Lyles and Mason Plumlee together as their bigs for the majority of that, and that's where the Jazz have got to take advantage in today's tonight's game. All right, we are about to play our first edition of Time Machine Tuesday. I don't know if that's a good name. Do we like that? I literally have a bag to my right. It has the year of every single Jazz team that's ever played in Utah. And then we will, based on today, literally there's a bag. This is not highbrow at all. And I'll pull a year out, and we'll go back and look at what we were doing at that time, who was playing and stuff like that. We'll see whether or not Time Travel Tuesday is fun. First, let me tell you about my friends over at Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. I love this. So I told you guys the story that I gave back the Ioniq, which I love, which is their hybrid. And I said to Blake Murdoch at the time, I said, Blake, I got to tell you, I've had two experiences about kind of looking at other cars. So when I first drove the Hyundai Santa Fe, I couldn't believe how many Hyundais were on the road. And then as I've shared with you, how much like when you park next to a Hyundai owner, you kind of look at each other like, yeah, I got it. I figured it out. And I'm thinking to myself, like, I didn't figure it out. I just kind of stumbled into this. And that's when I figured out that the Hyundai brand was that cool. I actually totally would have screwed this up. I'm not nearly as cool as you. I'm glad that you're giving me all this credit, but it's not true. That's like kind of, I don't say it. I just, yeah. They're incredible. They are. And when you can go get the 2008 Hyundai Sonata for $26.75, or $22,990, depending what you put on it. You got the Santa Fe Sport starting at $25,265, or if you soup it up, you can add it, make it, at $35,000, and it's got every bell and whistle imaginable. I mean, they're just the what you can get for the car is just incredible. So I'm driving the Ioniq, and I said to Blake, I said, I got to be honest, I have never driven a car in which I never saw the same car on the road ever in my whole time driving it. I'm on a mission that I now am going to get the 11 Ioniqs that were on his lot when I said this sold. So that one, because they're awesome. If you're going to buy a hybrid, please look into it. And two, so that then every time I see someone with Ioniq, I'm going to wave over to him. Now, right now, I'm not driving that car, so it'd be really weird when a guy in a white Chevy Silverado truck says to you, hey, look, hey, cool. So I'm now going to be a truck guy giving thumbs up to the Ioniq. So I'm on a mission for these to be sold. Two of them, by the way, have sold since this. But the funny part of the story, because I've never finished the story I'm going to tell, is that I told this, and a guy tweeted me saying, hey, I'm listening to you talk about the Ioniq while an Ioniq drives by me right now, which was pretty cool because I still have never seen one on the road. So they're over at 4646 South State Street. There's a bunch of other things as well. But I would tell you what, if you are interested in there are a hybrid, don't just automatically go do the Prius. I think that you'll find that the Ioniq is nicer, has more power, has more room, has better gas mileage. It's kind of cool. You'll be super impressed by it. I really liked it. And I want to say that I helped move. Two of them have sold since we sold this. Does it have anything to do with me? Probably not, but let's take all the credit. Let's take all the credit. 4646 South State Street. It is Murdoch Hyundai. All right, Time Travel Tuesday. Is this going to work? Let's go. He reaches into the bag. It's a white bag with black handles. Oh, it's actually a Lululemon bag. My wife has the greatest, smartest deal ever. She and her girlfriends don't shop at Lululemon because it's too expensive. So they just have a girlfriend group that for their birthday, they go get each other Lululemon. So then there's five of them, six of them. I'm convinced they pick their friends based on when their birthdays are. And then they all get their Lululemon stuff, but they claim they never bought it because it's for everybody's birthday. It's pretty smart. It is pretty smart, huh? All right, here we go. Pulling it out of the hat. Or out of the Lululemon bag. 97-98, right out of the chute. All right, let's go to Time Travel Tuesday. Utah Jazz, thanks to Basketball Reference for the ability to do this. 97-98. We are going to look down the jet. 97-98, by the way, if you don't recall, is the year in which we lost in the NBA Finals. The finished the year 62-20. But let's go to our schedule and results. It is the 28th of November. We had a game tonight. We played the Golden State Warriors. We started that year badly. Wow, look at this little history. We started the year 5-6. We lost in Sacramento 97-95 earlier in the week. Talk radio, which I was a part of, was probably going bananas. We lost to the Lakers earlier. We were 5-6. Beat the Spurs to go to 6-6. Had to take Minnesota to overtime earlier in the week, and then on this. In that Kings loss, let's go back and look at it. Let's look at this little stretch. This is what we'll do. This is Time Travel Tuesday. John Stockton was out with the knee injury. So we're playing without Stockton to go to 5-6 against Sacramento. That Sacramento team was Mitch Richmond, Corliss Williamson, Terry DeHaere, Billy Owens, and Olden Polonies with Loris Funderburk, Anthony Johnson, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. Wow, can't believe we lost. Mitch Richmond had 22 in the loss. Mailman had 32. Adam Keefe started, did not score. Howard Eisley was a point guard, had 17 points and 8 assists in that game. Our backup point guard was Jacques Vaughn. He went 1 of 6. So we lost to Sacramento. We came back and beat the Spurs 103-74. That Spurs team was good. Avery Johnson, it was like the head coaching group. Avery Johnson, Monty Williams, Sean Elliott, David Robinson, Tim Duncan. And we beat them handily, up 32-12 in the first, 26-23 in the second. We win at 103-74. Change in the starting lineup as we played Greg Foster started instead of Ostertag with Howard Eisley, Jeff Hornacek, Adam Keefe, Karl Malone, and Greg Foster. Foster took 2 threes in that game. We went 6 of 12 from 3 in our blowout win. The mailman had 20, 11, and 7. Hornacek had 19. Adam Keefe had 15 that night. Way to go, Adam. Howard Eisley, Jacques Vaughn still managed the point. Jazz didn't get a lot of bench work that night, but Troy Hudson was playing first of the time. Chris Morris was in the doghouse playing just 4 minutes a night. And let's take one last look at our final box score, which would be then we came back, played Minnesota, won in overtime in this little stretch. That was the Stephon Marbury, Tom Gugliotta, Kevin Garnett, Cherokee Parks group beat them in overtime. 33 for Mailman, 25 for Hornacek, 17 for Keefe. Howard Eisley played 41 minutes. We clearly had lost some confidence in Jacques Vaughn. He was down to 12 minutes. Chris Morris DNP'd. He was in a good place with Jerry at that point. Brian Russell had 17. And then on this day, in our time machine travel, the Jazz went to 9-6, having won. So the Jazz pull it back together. They win their third straight. We'd go on to win 6 straight. February 28th, we blow out the Warriors 111-82. That team was Bimbo Coles, all-time name team. Latrell Sprewell, Donyell Marshall, Joe Smith, and Eric Dampier. Felton Spencer was on the Warriors then. Todd Fuller, who I think spent. Muggsy Bogues. Well, that is an awful basketball team. They went to 1-12 with the loss. They were, in fact, awful. Latrell had 30. The Jazz win this one easily. Blow them out in the first quarter. Led the game at halftime 59-31. Wow. 21 for the mailman. He played 26 minutes. 18 for Greg Foster. Hit another 3. Stretch 4-5 before his time. Adam Keefe, Jeff Hornacek had 12. Howard Eisley, 7. Shannon Anderson had 13. Antoine Carr, 10. And the trials and tribulations of Chris Morris, he got 3 minutes of garbage time that night. Jacques Vaughn played 24 minutes, had 8 assists. That is your Time Travel Tuesday. That wraps up the show today. Thanks to Stop the Flow. Okay, it's Slow the Flow, but we might as well shoot for all of it. Here's a 10-second tip. Consider getting a WaterSense certified showerhead, which can save hundreds of gallons. Get more tips at slowtheflow.org and at 4646 South State Street. You can go visit my man Blake and Dane and the crew over at 4646 South State Street and say hi and check out the Ionic along with all the other things. It is Locked On Jazz on the Locked On Podcast Network.